My feet felt wet. I looked down. I'd trodden into a puddle where someone had pissed where he stood, rather than miss the games. I glanced behind me. A man with a deep black beard grinned back.
"Does it have to be now?"
Fastianos said.
"They're in the middle of the pentathlon."
There were no athletes on the field, which meant they were between events. The pentathletes are permitted a short break in between each of the five events: discus, javelin, long jump, wrestling, and running. Droplets of sweat had appeared on Marcus's brow. I, too, was sweating freely. The men were packed in like sheep, and the heat that rose from the bodies was incredible. It was the middle of the day, but anyone who wore a hat had it torn off by the men standing behind.
"Where are they up to?"
Marcos asked. He seemed to be easily distracted by the sport.
"They've finished the discus and the javelin. The long jump will start at any moment."
Even as Fastianos said it, the athletes emerged from the tunnel carrying their weights, accompanied by an Aulos player with his V-shaped flute. They walked single file across the stadium to the long side immediately before us, where the skama lay, a long strip of soft earth in which the long jumpers would land. While the athletes stretched and warmed up, I said, "That night outside Timo's tent, you said you'd keep an eye on him after I went to bed. What happened?" Fastianos groaned.
"I knew you'd ask that eventually."
The pentathletes were naked, of course, but for the only item of wear allowed, the kynodesma, the dog leash, a leather cord that tied around the tip of the penis and then wrapped around the scrotum to stop bits from jiggling while the athletes competed. They carried in each hand heavy weights to assist with their jumps. The first man to jump stepped up to the line. The Aulos player put his V-shaped flute to his lips and played a hymn to Apollo. The hymn was catchy and the rhythm so regular that I found myself tapping my foot. The first jumper swung his weighted arms back and forth in time to the music, stared intently at the skama, and bent his knees in preparation. The swings became progressively more violent till I thought he must surely be lifted off his feet. At the next swing, forward he leaped, arms and legs outstretched. The moment his feet landed in the softened ground, he swung his weighted arms back, bent his knees, and barely managed to hold his place. If he'd fallen or taken a step forward, he would have been disqualified. Immediately, one of the judges rushed to the landing spot with a measuring rod. The athlete walked back to the group with head hung low. Men about me shook their heads and muttered. One of them was Marcos.
"Not the best," he said.
"No,"
Fastianos agreed.
"But he needn't worry yet. He still has four more attempts."
He paused.
"The tent, yes, I know. I'm not avoiding the question. The truth is, I went for a walk to clear my head. To be honest, I knew Timodemus wanted to sneak off."
"And you let him?" I couldn't believe it, after all the effort I'd gone to. Fastianos snorted.
"I'm a middle-aged man. Middle-aged men don't stop young men when they want to party with the women."
"You knew he was looking for women?" The next pentathlete had stepped up to the line, and the Aulos player picked up the tune. The athlete made a huge leap, well beyond the first, but try as he might, he couldn't stop himself from taking the tiniest step. The crowd jeered, and he walked away without a measurement. Like the first man, he still had four tries. Fastianos resumed the conversation.
"Timo has been creeping from our rooms in Ellis for the best part of a month. Where else do young men go in the dead of night?"
but the Spartans might have been out to get him.
I was a trifle worse the wear for drink. You probably noticed. I suppose it affected my judgment.
I felt like throttling Festianos. If he'd done what he'd said he'd do, Timodemus wouldn't be in trouble now. So you let him go to the tents of the Pornoi?
The Pornoi? Timo has better taste than that. No, the lad's picked up a girlfriend.
That wasn't what he'd said to me. I was careful not to let my surprise show. In the most neutral voice I could manage, I said, "What's this girlfriend's name?"
"I have no idea. He got her in Elis. Apparently she followed him here."
I thought of how Festianos had promised me he'd watch Timodemus, then let him out on his own the moment my back was turned. Festianos was capable of lying. "You sure you don't know this girl's name?"
"I swear by Zeus,"
Festianos said.
"Why don't you ask Dromaeus? I bet he knows. That bastard never takes his eye off Timo. I don't know who's more driven for my nephew to win, my brother or Dromaeus."
Dromaeus sat in a corner of the gym with four other trainers. It seemed the ban against Team Timo didn't extend to a former Olympic champion. Dromaeus and his friends had laid wet cloths across their heads, no doubt to keep them cool in the heat. Even with the open courtyard to let in the breeze, the gym was like an oven. Dromaeus had won the Pancration 20 years ago. Among these men, he was a celebrity. I wondered how much it had cost One Eye to hire his services. The Timoneidae were a wealthy family, but to hire a man like Dromaeus must have stretched even their fortunes. The trainers spoke among themselves. They sat upon the benches that lined the walls. There were bowls of food scattered between them and wineskins in their hands. Marcos and I were about to interrupt their lunch. The thought made me realize that I'd probably be missing my own. There was too much to do. As we approached, I heard Dromaeus speak the words.
"If you ask me, I reckon it was one of those two what did it."
He broke off his conversation when he saw us.
"What do you want?"
They all five looked at Marcos and me, standing side by side. I said, "Dromaeus, we need to ask you what happened in the procession."
"You were there?"
"Yes."
"Then you know."
He turned his back on us. I stood my ground.
"Dromaeus, what did Arachos say?"
Dromaeus turned.
"Listen, kid."
"My name's Nikolaos."
"Listen, kid, I've got a reputation to think of. You understand?"
I nodded. "You don't want to be associated with a killer." The trainers burst into laughter. Dromaeus said,
"This young idiot thinks I don't want to be seen with killers. Hey, Theo, when did you last kill a man with your bare hands?"
Theo scratched his head.
8, 9 months ago? At that contest in Thebes. I got this guy in a real neat chokehold, and he just wouldn't give up. Bastard grabbed my balls and twisted, so I jerked his..."
"Thanks, Theo,"
Dromaeus broke in.
"Iosilos, how many men you killed?"
"You know I can't count high, Dromaeus. I'm an athlete, not a philosopher."
They all grinned while Iosilos counted on his fingers slowly.
"Reckon I've done 4, 8 men, as I recall."
He paused.
"Not counting Persians, of course."
"Barely worth the effort of killing,"
Dromaeus agreed with a straight face. He turned back to me.
"You see, kid, every man here is killed with his own hands, except for you and your friend."
He was wrong. In my case, at least. I'd killed 2 men, but neither was something I could talk about. Marcos kept his expression carefully neutral and hadn't said a word, but I felt, rather than saw, his muscles tense, and I guessed he too had seen his share of mayhem. Dromaeus had made his point.
Murdering don't mean a thing, kid. You know what they do before the pancration? They give us a blanket pardon for murder. Because all those kids you saw take the oath? Chances are one of them's going to kill another before these games are over.
One of them already has,
Theo said. But the next one will be fair and square. Where were you when Arakos died? I asked.
You're not suggesting I, an Olympic champion, had something to do with this, are you?
As it happens, Theo and Iosilos raised their fists.
No, of course not, Dromaeus.
Good.
Marcos cut in smoothly.
But consider, sirs, if we know where everyone was, that it helps us to eliminate the innocent from suspicion, you see. Also, anyone you saw must be innocent.
Marcos, the calm voice of reason. Once again he was doing better than I in an interview. This was becoming a habit I didn't want to continue. Dromaeus considered Marcos's words.
All right, he said. After the ceremony, where my moron of a student made a complete ass of himself in front of everyone, I dragged the young idiot here to the gym. Well, you know that, Nikolaos. You turned up later.
I nodded. I could still feel the bruises.
No one hung around after you left. Timodemus had his rub down. Then his uncle led him away.
Not one eye? I interrupted.
He wasn't there. You know that.
So I did. One eye had gone to see Pericles and then the judges. What about that night? Did you see Timodemus then?
Didn't see him the entire evening.
What about one eye?
Didn't see him neither.
Is that reasonable? You train his son, who is scheduled to fight in only a few days.
No, he isn't. Timodemus is a prisoner, remember?
You didn't know that then. Dromaeus shrugged.
All I can say is I didn't see one eye nor his son nor his brother the whole night, and I stayed up late, let me tell you.
Oh?
I stayed at the gym to greet my friends. It was dark when we left here.
It took that long? Marcos asked.
I have a lot of friends. Then we went out to dinner together.
All of you?
Most.
Anyone can vouch for you? I asked.
Yeah.
Dromaeus nodded at Theo and Iosilos. They grinned back at me, or rather, they bared their teeth.
I saw Arakos,
Theo said. Every head turned, and Theo looked surprised at the attention his statement got him.
What?
Dromaeus said.
When? Where?
I added.
It was when I left you guys, after dinner. Remember, I said I was off to get a woman?
Heads nodded. Everyone agreed Theo had been off to get a woman.
Well, I was walking to the women's camp, and Arakos passed me by.
Wait, when was this?
I demanded. Theo scratched his head.
I don't know. To tell you the truth, I'm not too good at telling the time. He means he was plastered,
added Iosilos helpfully. Theo looked hurt.
That ain't true, Eos,
he said.
I walked in a straight line all the way from here to the women, didn't I?
You was walking in a straight line when you left,
Eos allowed.
All right, so you was mellow.
Mello. Exactly.
Theo nodded.
Mello's fine. Means you can still get it up. Not like plastered, 'cause in that case with a woman you got to...
Could we get back to Arikos, please? I asked. Can any of you remember when Theo left your company? They all looked blank. Was the moon still rising, or was it falling? I asked in desperation.
Rising, said Dromaeus. I remember. Not long before it peaked.
Close enough to midnight, then. Excellent. Now, Theo, think hard. He gaped at me with an open mouth. Where did you see Arikos?
We crossed the ford together.
Did he see you?
Sure, we spoke.
What?
I said I was going to get a woman, and he said he was too, and then he was going to meet Timodemus to beat the little bastard senseless.
In the name of Zeus, why?
In revenge for what happened at Nemea.
What happened at Nemea? Marcos asked, looking confused. What's Nemea last year got to do with this?
Arikos lost. Timodemus won,
Theo said simply. I've heard there was some unpleasantness at Nemea, I said. Silence, but a few eyes turned toward Dromaeus. Theo, why didn't you tell me this before? Dromaeus said.
You didn't ask, Dromaeus.
I would have stopped a fight. I asked the trainers. Would it be cheating if two pancratists decided to batter each other in private before the contest? They had to scratch their heads about that one.
I don't know,
said Eosilus.
I never heard of it happening, but there's nothing in the rules against it. Is there, Dromaeus?
Dromaeus shook his head. Nothing in the rules says no, but if my student agreed to meet Arikos in the woods, I'd kill the idiot before the judges did. Dromaeus, when I walked in, I heard you say, I reckon it was one of those two what did it. Who were you talking about?
Never you mind.
There was nothing I could do to force him to answer. What would you say if I told you someone, I won't say who, has accused you of the murder? Dromaeus laughed bitterly.
I'd say one eye was full of donkey crap.
I gaped. What makes you think it was one eye?
The look on your face, for one. But I know 'cause I can read people. And let me tell you, that bastard would do anything to get Timodemus off. Do you know the most important skill of a pancratist?
Hitting people? Dromaeus snorted.
If that's all there was to it, any big man could be a champion. Look at Timodemus. He's a small guy, but he can mix it up just fine. Now, kid, the secret is in reading your opponent. Where he's looking can tell you a lot. So can his body, which muscles are tense, which relaxed.
So, you're saying Timodemus can read people? Marcos said.
Like a scroll. It's why he's the best. He's never where the other guy's about to strike. It's almost impossible to hit the little bastard.
It occurred to me, if Timo could read other people so well, then he knew Arikos was about to needle him before Arikos opened his mouth. Then, how could he claim he was so enraged by Arikos that he acted without thought? Marcos said,
I take it you don't like one eye.
Dromaeus shrugged.
I gotta train his son. I don't have to like the father.
What about Timo himself? I asked.
Timodemus is all right, Dromaeus said. Listen, kid, I like you. You took on Timodemus when you didn't have a hope in Hades. You knew he was going to beat you to a pulp, didn't you?
I told you we fought as kids. You said Timo needed to get the anger out of his system.
He nodded. I like that. A man ready to take a few lumps for a friend.
You said fighting me would get the anger out of Timo's system. Did it work, Dromaeus?
I think it did.
Then how can you think Timo killed Arikos?
You got it wrong, kid. You asked me before who the two were. The two I reckon did it.
Yes?
One Eye and Festianos.
The others in the room showed no surprise. It must have been common gossip. I said, why?
Isn't it obvious? They want their boy to win.
Festianos says you're desperate yourself.
Dromaeus snorted. I'm a professional. Sure, I want my student up there. Doesn't mean I'm gonna cheat for it. I told you I didn't see One Eye and Festianos that night, but I tried. I went around to their tent. Neither of them was there. I reckon they were off, seeing to Arikos.
The moment we left the gym, Marcos took my arm and led me to a quiet spot in the shade of the building. Quiet meant there were only 10 other men sitting there, fanning themselves and talking sport. Olympia really was crowded. Marcos said softly so the others wouldn't hear.
Nico, this evidence of Dromaeus agrees with the ostracon I found, the one that demanded a meeting. I know, Marcos, but Timodemus denied writing it. He's your friend, I understand, he said sympathetically.
It was the tone of a man who spoke to the bereaved, or the soon-to-be bereaved.
I don't know, Marcos. Give me some time, I need to think.
Had Timo lied? I didn't want to think about it, so instead I wondered what Diotima was doing, whether she'd made any progress, and suddenly I was gripped by the feeling of not having her with me. So I said, come on, Marcos, I want you to meet my wife. We found her at Petalie's tent. A queue of men waited outside. Diotima sat at a table beside the entrance with a stack of coins and a water clock dripping away the time. A man emerged smiling from behind the tent flap. He blinked, adjusted his tunic, and sauntered off.
Next!
Diotima called, without taking her eyes off the clock. It had only a few drops left to run. At the last drop, Diotima turned it over and made a mark on a wax tablet. She consulted her notes and said to the man at the head of the queue,
let's see, your doggy.
She handed him 4 obols from the stack of coins. The man said,
but what if I want something else?
If you want free sex, then you do it my way, she told him. You're wasting time. Get in there and stop screwing about, or...
Diotima realized what she was saying.
That is, do screw about.
The man grinned and went inside. A moment later, we heard a brief squeal from Petalie.
Diotima!
I said, shocked. Diotima looked up, pushed back a wisp of dark hair from her eyes, and said,
oh. Hello, Nico.
What in Hades do you think you're doing?
We need to know how long Petalie spent with clients. Didn't I say to leave it to me?
Petalie doesn't remember how many clients she saw.
I found a way to work out her payments. Most of them, anyway.
No one can look at a jar of coins and deduce in what handfuls they've been put in. I know you're smart, Diotima, but I can't believe even you could do it. Diotima blushed.
I had some help.
Who could possibly do such a thing?
Hi, Nico!
Came a boy's voice from under the table. I bent to look. There was my little brother, Socrates.
Socrates worked it out,
my wife admitted sheepishly. You asked a child?
Well, he is my brother-in-law, you know.
It was fun, Nico,
Socrates said eagerly as he crawled out from under the table.
Really unusual puzzle, but I solved it.
How? I said, unbelieving.
Say there are 14 obols in the jar, then it must be for a man on top and a doggy, because man on top is 10 obols, and doggy is 4.
Socrates paused.
I thought at first doggy had something to do with, you know, dogs. I wondered where they all were. It was a bit of a relief when Diotima explained about the different ways. Hey, Nico, which positions do you and Diotima...
Can we get back to Pedaly? I interrupted. Why couldn't it be for something else?
Oh, sure. Well, woman on top is 9 obols, and standing is 3. And there just isn't any other way to make 14. That's only an example, of course. You see?
I saw. That's really quite clever. But I saw Pedaly's money jar. There must be more than 100 coins.
Yes, Nico. But the customers come from different cities. Lots of different cities. There weren't more than a couple of customers from each place.
Go on, I said, intrigued despite myself.
Well, every city has its own coins, and everyone paid in their own currency.
It struck me like a hammer.
Dear God, Socrates, that's brilliant!
Socrates smiled like the rising sun.
Thanks, Nico. Do you know, I think that's the first time you ever said I did something smart. All the other times you...
Don't get carried away, I told him. Go on with your calculation.
Oh, well, in the jar there are only a handful of coins from most cities, so it's easy to work out all the different ways they could have been paid. Lots of the solutions are obviously ridiculous. We can eliminate those.
And where there's ambiguity, Diotima added. I heard the "I told you so" in her voice.
It usually doesn't change how many men paid.
She shrugged.
Sometimes we took the high answer, sometimes the low. It'll even out close enough that we know how many men she saw.
But the coins from different cities have different values.
Sure.
To do this, you'd have to know the fees in the coins of every city in the country for every way of having sex.
Oh, that's all right, Socrates said. I memorized them all. Pedaly told me all the going rates.
Terrific. My wife was running a brothel, and my little brother had memorized the cost of every sexual position with a prostitute for every currency in Hellas. Diotima said,
I'm timing the same number of men, duplicating the positions as close as we can get them. Pretty soon now, I'll be able to tell you what time Pedaly saw Arachos the Spartan.
The answer would be a gift of the gods, but I still had trouble believing the answer could have been divined. Socrates, tell me the truth. Did you really work out how many men she serviced? You're not making this up, are you?
No, Nico,
he said, and he sounded hurt.
I can prove it, honest. I'll show you every step.
No, I said at once. I believe you, Socrates. I'm sorry I asked. So, how many men in all? His eyes and mouth became large as plates.
A lot!
You've done well. Good thinking, Socrates.
Thanks, Nico!
He beamed. Don't mention this to our father. I pulled Diotima to the side. You've been teaching Socrates about sex? I hissed. He was surprisingly ignorant for a 12-year-old, she said calmly. Fortunately, he didn't need to know much to solve the mathematical problem. That's not the point. I told Father you'd never be involved in prostitution. What if he finds out? It's more important to get the answer. Diotima looked at Marcos, who'd listened to all this with a bemused expression. Who's your friend? She asked in a loud voice, quite blatantly changing the subject.
Marcos, meet my fiancée, Diotima. Diotima, this is Marcos of Sparta.
They looked each other up and down. At that moment, the man emerged from the tent.
Oh!
Diotima rushed back to the table and ran her finger down the list. She grabbed a handful of coins and thrust them at the man first in line.
She's on top. Go!
The man nodded his head and stepped in quickly. Diotima might not have approved of the seamier side of life, but she certainly knew how to run a brothel. She became preoccupied with her chart, checking her figures. Marcos and I looked at each other, both desperately trying not to laugh. Marcos grinned and said,
"Your remarkable lady would have made a fine madam."
"I wouldn't say that to her if you wish to live."
"I don't suppose Diotima has a sister, does she?" "Sorry, Marcos. You'll have to find your own clever priestess."
As I said it, I thought what a pity that was. I would have enjoyed having Marcos for a brother-in-law. Diotima turned her attention back to us.
"What have you two learned?"
Marcos and I took turns telling her what we'd been up to while Diotima listened closely. From time to time as we spoke, she had to break off the conversation to usher in another client for Petaly. When Marcos and I finished, Diotima said,
"Dromaeus accuses Festianos and One Eye. One Eye accuses Dromaeus. Festianos implies either Dromaeus or One Eye would have been happy to do the deed. The only person everyone agrees would not have killed Arachos is Timodemus. And he's the one who's arrested."
"How do you like Uncle Festianos or One Eye as murderers?" I asked her.
"They'd be a start."
It occurred to me my friend Timodemus might be a trifle miffed if I saved his life but got his father or uncle executed. I said, "Why do you think Dromaeus named them?"
"For the traditional reason," Diotima said. "He hates them. But they're all members of Timo's team."
"No one else has a motive,"
Marcos pointed out.
"Is there no one among the Spartans?" she asked. "Had this prickly pancreatist no enemies at home?"
Marcos considered.
"It's a reasonable question," he conceded. "But why, if you were a Spartan, would you pick Olympia to murder a fellow citizen? Surely there'd be better opportunities. In fact, I know there are."
Diotima opened her mouth to argue, but Marcos raised a hand.
"Wait. I agree it needs to be checked. I'll see if anyone in the Spartan camp had a particular reason to kill Arachos."
I wasn't entirely happy, but we had to trust Marcos in this. If Arachos did have an enemy in the Spartan camp, Diotima and I could never hope to discover him. The Spartans would refuse to talk to us.
It was hard to concentrate with the sounds of passion emanating from the tent behind us. Marcos seemed distracted, too, but Diotima didn't seem to notice. The line of men had shortened to the final two when the slave with the runny nose appeared from around the corner and walked up to us.
"Not you again."
I backed away. He sniffed loudly.
"Got another message from Pericles. The great man wants to see you."
He jerked his thumb in the direction of the main camp.
"Tell him we'll be there shortly," Diotima said.
"You're coming too?" I asked.
"I'm almost finished here,"
she said. Marcos said, "This is an Athenian-only meeting, I'm sure. I'll see what I can find at the Spartan camp while you consult your leader." "Pericles isn't leader of Athens," I said. "He's influential, but he's a citizen just like any other." "Then why do all you Athenians jump at his beck and call?" Marcos asked. It was a good question. Diotima and I pushed our way into Pericles' tent without bothering to knock. Pericles was equally abrupt. Without greeting, he asked,
"What progress?"
And then, seeing who was with me, demanded,
"What's she doing here?"
Pericles and Diotima didn't exactly get along. It may have had something to do with the fact that Diotima had once blackmailed him.
"Diotima's my partner, Pericles," I said. "If you want this job done in 3 days, I need all the help I can get."
He knew I was right. He also knew I would walk away if Diotima was excluded. Rather than argue about it, I caught him up on everything we'd learned. When I finished, Pericles said,
"I want you both to understand how important it is to Athens that Timodemus not be guilty of this killing."
I nodded. Yes, it would be shameful if an Athenian cheated in such a way.
"I don't think you've quite understood me. I said it's important Timodemus be found not guilty. I didn't say anything about him actually being innocent."
"You're not suggesting we deliberately ignore evidence, are you?" Diotima said.
"Not at all. Unless it's inconvenient, in which case, yes."
"Pericles," I said, offended. "I swore an Olympic oath to find the killer of Oracos. Timodemus is my closest friend, but if the facts lead to him, I have no choice."
"Yes, you do. How many men are dead of this debacle?"
"One."
"If we're not careful, the victims of this crime will expand to thousands."
Pericles picked up the bronze stylus he'd been playing with the last time we'd met in his tent and began to twirl it in his fingers.
"Did you know there was a battle between Athens and Corinth while you two were away in Ionia?"
"In the war for control of Megara? Yes."
"Corinth sent an army to settle the issue," Pericles said. "We were committed to so many wars in different parts of the world that all we had left to send were old men and boys." "Old men and boys! Against an army of veterans!"
"And?"
"The old men and the boys won. The army from Corinth was driven off. Our lads erected a victory tripod."
"Good for them." "The Corinthians can't have been pleased," Diotima said.
"They weren't. The people of Corinth sent their army straight back with orders to do a better job. The Corinthian army erected a victory tripod too, claimed they'd won, refused to fight, and took off for home a second time."
We all laughed. Pericles said. It may seem very well, but I've heard news this day. As I warned you might happen, Corinth is using this killing to egg on the Spartans to join the squabble. We must do nothing that would give the hawks in Sparta an excuse to declare war. Stretched as we are, we'd certainly lose it.
I see. This time I think you do. If Sparta and Athens ever go to war, it will be like two giant lions mauling each other.
Could it come to that?
I asked, concerned. I was as ready to fight for Athens as any man, but I hated the discipline of army life.
I begin to think a fight might be inevitable, Pericles said. There have been incidents. Small parties of Spartans have waylaid Athenians on their own, to rough them up. Our men defended themselves. There's yet to be open fighting, but it's only a matter of time. We're not at war at the moment. I don't wish to be when these games end.
Can't you stop this, Pericles?
No. But you can.
Me?
You. The Spartans won't like it, but if Timodemus is officially innocent, then there is no cause for dispute. Tension will fall. There are many things that could come of this debacle, Nikolaos, but there is one that must not. Athens and Sparta must not go to war.
Ouch!
Pericles looked down to see blood flowing from his palm. In his excitement, he'd stabbed himself with the stylus. Diotima said,
But Pericles, Nico sworn an oath. What if we discover Timodemus did kill Arachos?
Pericles said coldly. Then Nikolaos must decide. Is he an investigator first, or an Athenian? Diotima and I walked out of Pericles' tent, out of the Athenian camp, and out of Olympia. Our path took us past the camp of the Spartans, as it had the night Arachos died. A handful of Spartans who lounged about the entrance saw me. One of them knocked another in the shoulder and pointed as we passed. I ignored them. I knew I'd become notorious. Everyone had seen me take the Olympic oath. We went to the woods, which were quite pleasant to stroll in, if you didn't think of them as a murder scene.
What do you think?
I asked her.
Pericles has a point,
Diotima conceded.
Is it worth delivering justice for one victim if it kills thousands more?
I'm tempted to give in and do as he asks.
Yet the entire thing is unethical.
The pressure to exonerate Timodemus was enough to make me shake. His father, his uncle, Pericles, and the Athenians had made clear the result they expected. What would my life be like back in Athens if he were found guilty? I'd be known for the rest of my life as the man who destroyed one of our own. A hand pushed me in the small of my back. I stumbled against a large oak tree.
Athenian!
A voice spat the word. I turned to see five men, one of whom stood before the others. He was tall, and the muscles in his arms bulged. The other four looked tough, too. None of them smiled. They had the look of men who spent their days in the sun, and to a man, they looked deeply uncomfortable in civilian dress. Spartans. These were the men we'd passed. I'd been so absorbed I hadn't even noticed them follow me. Too late, I recalled Pericles' warning that the Spartans were targeting Athenians on their own. Not that I was alone, but these men would have discounted Diotima. The five stepped smoothly, almost dance-like, to form a semicircle around us. Diotima moved instinctively to cover my back. I was proud, but worried. The last thing I wanted was her hurt.
You're a troublemaker, Athenian. A biased troublemaker.
What are you talking about?
The leader spat on the ground, narrowly missing my foot.
Word is, you're a friend of the man who killed Arikos.
The supposed killer, I corrected.
The killer. You'll do whatever it takes to get him off, won't you? 'Cause he's an Athenian, and the man he killed's a Spartan. And that's what you Athenians do, isn't it? Tell lies and cheat.
All five Spartans glared at me. I swear to you, if I find the killer of Arikos, I'll denounce him before every man.
Sure you will. What are you waiting for?
Some evidence.
Plenty of that. Problem is, it doesn't suit you.
I was uncomfortably aware that this was close to the truth. There was enough to convict Timo in any Hellene court.
It's not good enough. It's not certain. I need to prove it could only have been Timodemus. We reckon you'll hold out until you can cook up something that'll get him off.
I forgot myself and stepped forward in anger.
That's a lie.
Instantly, the Spartans surrounded me. One of them grabbed Diotima by the arm and flung her aside. She skidded across the rough ground. When she came to a halt, she picked herself up and ran. She ran out of the vegetation, out of the woods, and back down the path to Olympia.
Good. At least she was safe.
They pushed me, and I stumbled into the man at my right. They pushed me back, and I fell against the men on the other side. This went on so long I became dizzy. It was like a boys' ball game, but played by men, and with me as the ball. If they'd done this on the grounds of Olympia, passers-by would have interceded at once to stop them. But no one could see us here.
You don't mess with the Spartans, the leader said. And you don't cheat them either. But you're an Athenian. You always cheat, don't you?
He needs a lesson, Scarathos,
another Spartan said.
That he does,
Scarathos agreed. Me against five Spartans. There was only one way this could end. I might as well go down fighting. I drew in a deep breath and prepared to strike first. I hoped it wouldn't hurt too much.
I don't think so.
Marcos shouldered his way past my tormentors to stand beside me. I don't know who was more surprised, the Spartans or me. They stopped pushing. Marcos and I stood side by side, and suddenly I felt much more confident. One against five was a certain loss. Two against five was survivable, especially when the two were Marcos and me. Scarathos said,
I wouldn't have picked you for an Athenian lover, Marcos.
No, Scarathos. I love Sparta, Marcos said. And unlike you undisciplined idiots, I can follow orders. King Pleistarchus commands the investigation run its course.
So you protect the Athenian?
Scarathos spat in the dust. He can look out for himself. I protect Sparta.
Step aside, Marcos, or suffer with this bastard.
Marcos smiled and shook his head. As I said, I follow orders.
Then you'll get your lesson too, Athenian lover.
They didn't say a word, merely circled and fainted. Sometimes one jumped to startle us, waiting for Marcos or me to trip or make a mistake.
What are you doing here?
I said to Marcos out of the side of my mouth as our enemy circled us like sharks.
You mean you didn't send her?
He said, puzzled.
Her?
Diotima. She ran straight into the Spartan camp, knocked over the guard who tried to stop her, and screamed my name. I came at once. Marcos and I turned so that we stood back to back. We both crouched, waiting.
I hope you can do this, Marcos said to me quietly.
Don't worry about me, I said. I'll be standing when you're down.
No, you won't, Athenian.
10 drachma says I will.
20.
Done. None of us had weapons, or Marcos and I would have been dead within heartbeats, if that was their plan. Scarothos attacked first. He punched at my head. I dodged and kicked to the side, guessing there would be another man there. There was. My foot connected with a knee, and a man shrieked. Behind me I heard grunts of pain, and I hoped it wasn't Marcos. There was a snap, and one of the Spartans screamed.
Bastard broke my wrist!
I smiled. That was when they all attacked at once. The two facing me grabbed an arm each. A third man appeared, the one whom Marcos had hurt. He nursed his left wrist in his right hand. He kicked, swift and hard and strong, into my balls. I screamed and my knees buckled, but I told myself I mustn't fall.
Why don't you give up, Athenian?
Scarothos breathed in my ear, his hands tight on my forearm.
Go down, and it'll all be over.
I gasped. And pay 20 drachma to Marcos? Never. I kicked both my heels against the damaged wrist of the man in front. Suddenly, my pinioned arms were an advantage, and my heels connected with a satisfying crunch. I could feel his bones move between my feet as I rubbed them together. He screamed and fell back. Scarothos let go to punch me hard, 1, 2, in the diaphragm. The other man got an arm across my throat to choke me. I was about to buckle. Desperate, I reached behind, searching for something to grab. I knew it wouldn't stop Scarothos from killing me. A knife came out of nowhere to strike Scarothos in the side of the head. It was Diotima. She'd returned, and she'd thrown her priestess knife with perfect accuracy. All that practice in her tent had saved me. A priestess knife is for sacrifices. It has a razor-sharp edge, but no point to speak of. If it had, Scarothos might have died. As it was, the blade bounced off his skull, and he fell back. I found what I was grappling for and twisted without mercy. The man behind screamed, and the arm across my throat disappeared. Enraged, I turned and rabbit-punched the man who denied me air. He dropped like a stone. I looked around. Both men who'd attacked Marcos were down and unconscious.
What did you do to them?
I rasped through my burning throat. Marcos shrugged.
They weren't very good.
He grabbed Scarothos by the shoulder.
One to go.
We both took a hold of Scarothos, whose wits had been addled by the blow from the knife. That wouldn't stop either of us from beating the stuffing out of him.
After you, I said courteously to Marcos. No, no, my friend. After you.
You're too kind. Perhaps if we hit him together.
An excellent suggestion. On the count of three, then?
We both drew back a fist. Marcos counted.
1, 2. Hold!
Marcos and I looked around to see King Pleistarchus staring at us. We let go of Scarothos. He staggered back, his eyes rolled up, and he flopped to the ground. Pleistarchus looked at the carnage.
"Am I interrupting anything?" he asked.
Marco stood to attention and said,
"No, Pleistarchus. Only some light exercise."
Pleistarchus stepped over the body of the unconscious Scarathos.
"Always good to get in some exercise,"
he said with a straight face.
"Keeps men fit for combat."
He counted bodies.
"Speaking of which," he continued, "why are you still alive?"
"Training standards aren't what they used to be, sir,"
Marcos replied, matching the deadpan tone of his king.
"They certainly aren't. If you two could stand against five of our best, these men are supposed to be officers. I'll have harsh words for them."
He towed a groaning body. "When they're conscious."
"You didn't send them, King Pleistarchus?" I asked.
He looked at me in surprise.
"Me? Of course not. What makes you think that?"
The demons were whispering in my ear, telling me what to say. "Because Arikos was killed by the secrets, I wondered if those secrets were yours." I didn't know what it meant. I hoped he did. Pleistarchus turned gray. Marcos stared as if I were some psyche he'd crossed in the night. The Spartan king stood silent for a moment before he said,
"I see.
Come with me." He turned and strode off without looking back, assuming we'd follow his abrupt order, which of course we did. Diotima stepped in between Marcos and me. She was breathing hard. Her chitin was dirty where she'd skidded across the dirt, and her hair straggled down her face, but she looked excited. I didn't think I'd ever loved her more.
"Thanks,"
I said to her. She gave me a smile. Pleistarchus led us to the camp of the Spartans. He didn't stride so much as march. Men instinctively stepped out of his way, and Pleistarchus barely noticed. He went straight past the guards at the entrance, one of whom glared at Diotima, and stopped at the open flap of his tent to motion us inside.
"No one disturbs or hears us,"
he ordered the guard within. The man nodded and went out. The tent was furnished with one camp bed and one travel chest. That was it. The king of Sparta traveled with less than Diotima. In one corner, a small folding table and a camp stool. Only one stool. We stood in the middle space to talk.
"Gentlemen and lady, we have a problem," Pleistarchus said. "I find there are things I must tell you, if you are to succeed. In fact, the security of Sparta may depend upon it. You, Nikolaos? Yes, before I continue, you must swear by Zeus and Athena that you will not reveal what you hear to any man, and particularly not to any Spartan. Do you agree?"
"Yes, Pleistarchus."
It meant I couldn't use what I learned as evidence before the judges of the games, but it might lead me to the killer. I would worry about evidence later.
"May Zeus destroy me if I reveal what you tell. May Athena persecute me."
Diotima nodded.
"Artemis, hear my oath," she said.
"What do you say, Marcos? Can these Athenians be trusted to keep an oath?"
Marcos looked at me as if I were livestock for sale. After a moment, he said,
"Yes, Pleistarchus, Nikolaos is an honest man. Surprisingly honest, considering the work he's in."
Plistarchus grunted.
Whoever heard of an honest Athenian?
Be it so, Plistarchus.